Well, thank you. Thank you very much for organizing the symposium and inviting us here. Now, we have to shift gears a little bit. We'll go to croplands. And during these 2, 3, 4 days at the meeting here, you probably heard quite a lot of talks about the importance of cover crops and the many ecosystem benefits that cover crop provide. Among them, overall, is enhancing the soil tilth of the farm, providing nutrient cycling, improving water infiltration, reducing problems of soil erosion, and like in this cartoon here, if they have flowering species, they will be providing nectar and pollen for beneficial organisms such as pollinators and parasitoids. They're also one important tool that we have in our toolbox to develop an integrated weed management program. Now, on the other hand, there are some issues that somehow hinder the adoption of cover crops, particularly where I work in Montana, where we have anywhere between 9 and 12 inches of precipitation per year. So it's a very dry environment. Farmers are concerned about the retention of soil moisture, and sometimes having that cover crop compromise the soil moisture. There's going to be a cost associated with establishment, maintenance, and termination of the cover crop, and at the same time, the farmers don't see a direct revenue from that cover crop. They don't see anything coming back that specific year. It may take up to 4, 5, 6 years for those ecosystem services to build up in these dryland systems where we work. And another important issue are some termination challenges. A common approach to terminate cover crops, like in this organic farm, this guy has around 4,000 acres of organic small grain crops, and he uses cover crops, is to terminate them with a tillage. The problem, as I said, we have a very low moisture, and you can have 6, 7 weeks without any drop of rain, gusty winds, temperatures in the 90, 100 degrees, and soil erosion is a major concern that we're having. There's been some interest in using roller crimpers to terminate cover crops, but they don't really work in these dryland systems. By the time we need to terminate the cover crop, we can effectively do that. They resprout. It hasn't worked. One approach that works, and some farmers use them mostly at a smaller scale, is to mow the cover crop, leave the residue on the ground, and then come back next year before seeding and incorporate all the material with a spader. Now, that's from an environmental point of view, okay. The problem is that they have to have two pieces of machine and they have to run the machine twice, again, increasing costs. So we thought, well, what about grazing? Can we graze those cover crops and try to terminate them and at the same time maybe control some weeds? So we asked a local farmer if he let us put some sheep on his cover crop. He said yes. We brought our fences. That was around 4 years ago, and 5 to 6 days later, this is what we saw. So yes, we can terminate cover crop with sheep. Now, from an ecological point of view, that's a disturbance. We are totally changing the characteristics of the systems very abruptly in 4 or 5 days. So are we pushing the system beyond a certain threshold that it may become not a good tool? And that's where it's driving our research, which is what are the ecological implications of this strategic grazing? And if we want to put it within the ecological framework again, we can think in the way by which communities assemble. And we have this assembly community hypothesis, and basically it says that you have a regional pool of species or propagules, and some of them will arrive to specific areas, and some of them will be able to colonize, and you can think of several environmental filters that allow some species to go through those filters, and some of them cannot go through. And this paper was published a few years ago in Tree, and they say that we can use this idea to have some projects in restoration. So we put our management In this case, is the seeding or dispersal, some burning, for example, and some biotic interactions such as the presence of invasive species. They will be creating specific filters, and you will have a restored and unrestored community. The same approach can be thought for our management practices, where we have, for example, our system management, organic versus conventional, think it broad scale, our specific crop rotation, how many crops, how many years do we repeat certain crops, and in our case, the specific approach we have to terminate the cover crops. And if that's the case, then we will be having or not different communities depending if we mow them or we till them or we graze them. And we can use that framework to think about two components of the associated biodiversity. And specifically, we target weeds, kind of a pest group, and also we wanted to put ground beetles in terms of a beneficial organism, generally predators, in the agroecosystem. And we've been doing this research at different scales and different systems, ranging from horticultural farms, small scale, 2-5 acres, to experimental plots, up to where they're based on small grain systems, up to farmers' field where they farm a couple of 1,000 acres. Now, because I don't have too much time today, I will concentrate the rest of the presentation in the horticultural systems. Very similar results were found in the other two systems. We conducted this study at the Town Harvest, which is a local CSA, basically sells the product in a CSA format and in the local farmer's market. It has 2.5 acres and an average yield of around a little more than 22,000 pounds per year. And it's an organic certified farm. And the farm manager, basically he divides the farm in six and he puts a cover crop, and then the other five areas have in production, and then he rotates the cover crops, so every area has a cover crop, one every 6 years. The cover crop is a cocktail of different species, buckwheat, beet, sweet clover, and peas, and he chose that cover crop because he wanted to fix nitrogen and at the same time mobilize phosphorus. And we came with a very simple experiment we could do in his farm. We basically said at random, these are areas that you're going to be mowing, these are areas where we're going to be grazing. And we used this as an opportunity to measure as many things as we thought we could measure, from the soil nutrient content, the compaction of the soil, temperature, moisture of the soil, as well as the biomass produced in those cover crops, the presence of weeds before and after terminating the cover crops, and the beneficial organisms, ground beetles, before and after we terminated the cover crop. But also, we were interested to see if there was a sort of a midterm impact, what happened the next year with the crop production. So we asked Jazz if he could seed three crops, kohlrabi, lettuce, and spinach, across those areas. And then he allowed us to go back and have some areas where we measure the weed pressure and the yields. That's in the subsequent year, right? So we brought our sheep, we put our temporary fences, and 1 hour after we started our experiment, we were kind of shocked, like, yeah, definitely we are creating a difference in the system, because it took him 30 minutes to mow all these areas, and it was going to take us 5 to 6 days. So are they going to be different ecological filters or not? Well, from the environmental variables, they were not. We have exactly the same soil temperature and soil moisture both years, and no difference in terms of the soil compaction, no difference as well in terms of the nutrients component. So everything was a good story, similar results both years. And when we look at the weed communities, and this is a non-metric multidimensional scaling, a multivariate analysis, basically is nothing more than a fancy way to show how similar communities are. So those that are closer have similar composition of species in terms of which species are there and their relative abundance. So in orange, I'm putting the pre-treatment plots, and in green, the post-treatment. The triangles are the grace areas, and the circles are the mow areas. Okay, the closer they are, the more similar. And we can basically group them with these lines. And what you see here is that there was a clear shift from the pre-treatment to the post-treatment, but they overlap. So that means that we end having the same weed communities after we graze or mow those areas. And the same results were found in 2013. Why was that? It's because the post-treatment species composition, so after we grazed or we mowed, both communities were dominated by the same species. One was Amaranthus retroflexus, red-root pigweed, and in the case of mowing, we basically suspect that it was resprouting. That's what we observed. After you mow red-root pigweed, it just resprouts. And in the case of grazing, you can see it in there. Sheep didn't touch them. They did not like red-root pigweed. For the other species that was the most abundant one, was common mallow, Malva neglecta, and it's a prostrated species, so we did not touch them when we mow them, and the sheep don't like to eat something that is so prostrated. So it happens that we have two completely different mechanisms. One is a mechanical tool, the other one is a biological one. They take different amount of time, half an hour to 5 days, but they end being a very similar ecological filters. When we look at the ground beetles, basically we found the same set of species that you will find in any other agroecosystems in Montana, nothing fancy there. But again, the question was, are we filtering different species? And in here we have the activity density, which is what entomologists use to name relative abundance of ground beetles, how many we can sample, and no difference between the mow and the graze, being the graze the red and mow the blue. In terms of the Simpson diversity in here, you can see again absolutely no difference between mow and grazed areas. Again, we did this fancy technique of ordination, and here I'm representing in the triangles, the blue triangles, the grazed areas, and the pink dots are the mowed areas, and we divided them in three periods. Basically, is the pre-cultivation period here, then before we terminated those cover crops, and then after. And you can see this total overlap in 2012 and similar results in 2013. It looks like we have a little bit of difference in the post-treated areas. Actually, when we run our PERMANOVA analysis, there were no statistical differences. So again, very similar, or actually exactly the same communities for the weeds as well as the ground beetles. So going back to the question, are these representing different ecological filters? No, they are very similar. Very different techniques, but they end generating the similar associated biodiversity. Now, very importantly, that forage was excellent. I mean, when we look at the nutrient content of the forage, was basically class one. So if the farmer had sold grazing leases, he could have get anywhere between $24 to $44 per hectare by selling those grazing leases. So now we are turning something that costs him money into a benefit, because he can get some money. There are some numbers that we still need to make, take into account, such as bringing the temporary fences and bringing the sheep, but we have definitely a potential benefit. Question, or the next question was, what happened the subsequent year when we, or the farmer actually, planted his crops? Are we somehow compromising those areas? So the, again, good news is that for the three crop species, there were no difference in terms of the biomass of the weeds for, again, kohlrabi, lettuce, and spinach. And this is the previously grazed or previously mowed area, so similar weed pressure, and no differences in terms of the yield for the three crops. In 2013, we lost the spinach. was a hail. So in summary, we can see that in horticultural systems, sheep can be integrated to terminate cover crops, to manage weeds. We are testing that in other plots. We don't see any major ecological drawbacks, and we can see some potential economic benefits. The question that needs to be asked is, who pays who? In other words, am I terminating your cover crops, or am I feeding your sheep? And this is sort of a partnership, an economic partnership that should be established between farmers and ranchers, which is something we are exploring right now. And do I have time for questions?
Yes.
I went too fast. So, so questions?
Sheep and tractors eliminate in different ways. Is there no sheep effect on fertility?
Sorry, it was?
Is there no sheep effect on soil fertility?
We didn't see any difference in sheep in soil fertility. We are, as I show you, this is one study. We've been doing another study over several years. We haven't seen any major problems so far. So, not that I know, not in our areas. I think the being important issue here is that you can always make a mess with your management practices. So if you overgraze, then you will start having problems of soil compaction, and you may start having also problems of drawing your nutrients into beyond those threshold levels. The people who are in charge of managing the sheep, they have a kind of a threshold of trying to leave around 10% of the biomass, and that's when they take the sheep out of the plot. So I think it's a question of knowing how to do it. So the sheep in this study were the year before, was the year where we have the cover crop. And then the subsequent year, he put his crops. In another study where we are doing in the small grain systems, we actually do it in the same year, depending on the practice. In some cases, we even did it with the wheat already germinated. We have a big issue with weeds, and the weeds were going to be choking our crops, so we decided, okay, since we're going to lose it, let's just feed our sheep. And the good news is that we have a recovery of the wheat. It resprouted, and so it can be used. It's a pretty flexible tool. No more questions? Well, thank you then.